Hi, this is Ben Vereen, singer, dancer, actor, star. You're listening to Dave's Gone By on UNC Radio.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By. We have yet another Broadway legend that we're bringing to the neighborhood. It's always such a thrill to talk to these folks. I mean, over the years we've talked to, of course, Carol Channing and people like Karen Mason and Robert Cuccioli and just name after name after name, Donna McKechnie, Carol Lawrence, and now we add to that very, very esteemed list with a true legend of the Broadway theater. He is also known for his movies and for TV because he's one of those triple threat kind of people. He's an actor, a dancer, and a singer. He was a Theater World Award winner and Tony nominee for the original Jesus Christ Superstar on Broadway, then went on to win a Tony for the original Pippin, Emmy nominee for playing Chicken George in Roots. He is in the American Theater Hall of Fame, and in fact, he was recently honored with a Bistro Award, the Cabaret Award. He was in Jelly's Last Jam and Wicked. I'm taking up so much time saying all the wonderful things he's done, I won't have time. I talked to the amazing Ben Vereen, who's with us in the neighborhood. Welcome, Ben.
Hello, Dave. How are you doing? Hello to your neighborhood.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much. We call it the Daverhood. See, I throw a pun into everything.
The Daverhood?
Yeah.
Like Dave's Gone By?
That's right. I throw Dave anywhere. Like if I think of something that I kind of remember from the past, and I think it's happened before, that becomes déjà vu. It just, you know.
It's just déjà vu.
It goes on and on from there. But I have never had the pleasure of speaking to Ben Vereen before, so I'm very honored and thrilled to be talking to you. And also reminding, even before anything else, that you're going to be on Long Island doing Stepping Out with Ben Vereen at the Tillis Center in Brookville. Tell us, first of all, about this particular show of yours.
Well, it's a show in preparation. It's a work in progress, because we're moving towards a bigger show for Broadway.
Oh.
And this is the essence of that show that we're putting together. So I'm looking forward to meeting and seeing all my old friends and new friends at the Epcot Center.
Is it an autobiographical show about your career, your life, etc.?
Well, pretty much it's not so much about me, it's about us as a people and what we've gone through, and I have had the honor of living this life with you. That's the ultimate show that we're building. And here you'll have little fragments of that show, such as little kids, my career, people I've worked with. We've all enjoyed along this journey. But the journey is about you. And you know, one thing I've learned on this path is that it hasn't been about me. It's about you allowing me to be. And so to my audiences, I say thank you.
Oh.
Thank you.
Well, but let's also talk, since it's about your journey and the people that you want to thank, folks that you studied under when you were at the High School of the Performing Arts, I didn't realize
that. Gertrude Scher,
yeah.
David Woods, Norman Walker, Nina Popova, this goes on and on, Malinka, it goes on and on.
Well, did you take a master class with Martha Graham?
No, I had, my teacher was David Woods.
Oh.
Who was of the Martha Graham Company, who was a magnificent teacher.
Well, what did you learn from him? What's something that you can pinpoint that's in your style?
Dave gave me the understanding of what dance is all about. He gave me the sense of the intent and the storytelling, because it isn't about the movement. Once you get the choreography, where do you live inside that? What's the story that the choreographer or you are trying to tell? And that was the school that I learned from. And because of David Woods, I was able to move easily into acting. When I teach, I try to instill that in dancers as well as actors and singers, is to make that transition smooth. That's all an inside job.
And tell the story through dance. But then you're also a very physical person and very physical in your dancing, and that had to come, at least from some level, from your work with Bob Fosse. Please give us some Fosse memories.
Well, yeah, Bob Fosse was the one who shaped the madness that came about. Because I just finished a show with Tom O'Horgan, who was probably one of the only directors who had four shows on Broadway in our history. And I was working with him on Jesus Christ Superstar. And I've been working with this man. And even when I worked with Fosse in Sweet Charity, it was the beginning of our relationship. And when I came back, then I was doing Jesus Christ Superstar, and the reviewer up in the New York Times wrote, Jeff Findholm, who plays Jesus, gets lost in the Sunni scenery. And Ben Vereen, who plays Judas, tears up the scenery looking for him. So I was sort of all over the place. And Bob took that and just honed it in.
Oh.
In his focus.
Because Bob Fosse was all about the small gesture, the little movement of the fingers, the tip of the hat. Yeah.
That are very big.
They become magnified when, you know, you've got the audience's focus. So is that what else did you learn from Fosse? Because you not only worked with him on Sweet Charity, there was Pippin and the movie, all that jazz.
I learned a lot from Bob. Bob was, he was quite a mentor. I learned lessons more, very much so. He would often say, if the audience isn't with you, get smaller, and they'll come.
Oh, that's wonderful.
So I learned quite a lot from Bob. Bob was gracious enough to come in on the show called Grind, we did on Broadway. And he choreographed the number of the show. Yep. Director Hal Fritz. We did a show called Grind.
Yes, I remember. I don't remember it. It was a little bit.
In fact, Lester Wilson was the original choreographer, but Bob came in and did one piece on me.
Grind, I have to ask, besides obviously the accidents that you've had and some other stuff, was that the biggest career disappointment when Grind didn't become a hit?
Of course. We've done a lot of work on the show. We put a lot into that show. Faye Kanan and then Larry Grossman wrote the music, and Lester Wilson, the choreographer, and of course, Hal Prince, the great Hal Prince. And we had all this wonderful talent on stage, but I think we hit at just the wrong time.
Mm.
It was before its time. As a matter of fact, I'd like to redo that show. I'd like to direct it myself and bring it back.
Nice. I am curious, and nobody probably else would ever ask this question, but Grind also featured Stubby K. Do you have any memories of
That's
Stubby
right.
K?
Stubby K.
Yeah. Do you have any any memories of him, any anecdotes?
Oh, Stubby was a sweet man, and he was a consummate performer, an artist. It was amazing watching him every night, how he'd work and how he'd just constantly was on. I had the privilege of working with not only him, but Tony Randall.
Oh, my God.
Another show in a thing called A Christmas Carol at the Madison Square Garden.
Right.
A Christmas Carol together. And the work, he never missed a show. We did four shows a day. He never missed a show.
That's, yeah, and he was an older man by then. I mean, he was not a spring chicken, exactly, yeah.
Right. He just married Heather, his wife, his young wife.
That's right. I'll tell a quick story that I actually saw
him. He's my hero.
Well, he took over. I went to see someone who did miss performances in one of his last productions. I saw George C. Scott was appearing in Inherit the Wind. And he was not
and
well.
I saw Tony Randall in that production, too.
I saw both of them on the same night. Because George C. Scott was indisposed towards the end of the show. And suddenly in pops Tony Randall with a script in his hand to finish the night.
Tony was great.
He was the definition of a trooper. That is, and so are you. I mean, for goodness sake, we have to go through this this thing of, I didn't even realize when you were hurt. All those years ago, you were in a car accident. You had three accidents on the same day, and you died and survived.
Yes.
I mean, I know it's not a pleasant thing, but can you walk us through it quickly, how that happened?
Yeah, I was driving in my car, and I obviously hit a tree. People tell me this because I don't have any memory of it. And I damaged an artery to the brain. I was walking home about 3 in the morning from my manager's house in Malibu, and I had a stroke and was hit by a truck. And the guy who hit me was someone I had met some years ago named David Foster. He didn't know it at the time.
Oh.
And when I woke up in the hospital, and the doctor said it would be at least 3 years before I'd even walk again. And they had told me to forget about my career, because that's their understanding. They're brilliant. I'm not knocking my doctors. They were brilliant. They are brilliant. But that was what they were seeing. But there's a thing called the inner spirit. And there's a thing called, you know, the tenacity of the will. And I had wonderful encouragement. You know, all the people who prayed for me and all the people who came and visited, they sent me cards. And kids would send me cards and letters. All these things encouraged me. And then finally, I ended up at Jelly's Last Jam, and Gregory Hines, the great Gregory Hines, said if he can be ready by April 3rd of the next year, he's got a role in this show. And I was rehabbing at a place called Kessler,
mm-hmm.
Jersey. And I went to Bonnie Evans, who's the CEO, and I said, I couldn't talk. I had a trach at the time. Mouthed that I wanted to do this show. And she and my therapist went down to see the show, and she came back. She said, we can do this. And they had me ready.
And how long, they told you 3 years before you'd even do, like, walk.
They had me ready. They had me on stage a year late, on April 3rd of the next year. I was on stage, Joni Smash Jam.
How, take us through a little bit of the actual rehab when you were on your peak. I mean, were you working 8-12 hours a day on crutches?
You see, a wonderful thing about the therapist, the physical therapist and the occupational therapist, which we do not talk about. The occupational therapist, although right away when you're in an accident, you say, I got to get to the gym, I got to get to physical therapy, because we know physical, we got to get the body going. But the body can't move without the fine motor skills, and that's where the occupational therapists come in. And they come in and work that part of exercising, that part, while the physical therapists work on the massive aspect of bringing the body back together. And it was daily. It was every day. And now, understand, so the therapists come in, they work with you, and they see what's going on, but they don't just leave it there. They go home, and they think about what they can do to bring you out, to bring more of you. And the idea for the patient is to show up. A lot of patients just lay there, they get angry because they're angry about what happened to them, and they don't show up. The therapist can only do as much as you can do by showing up. And they went to work. They would show up, I would show up, and we just worked this thing. They would go home, and we'd work from, I started at like 9 in the morning and go to 12 to have lunch, then come back all afternoon to about 6, 5 or 6, and you work. They go home. I would be still working.
Wow.
I would work mentally on myself. I would talk to my body. I would do, stem things, electric stems. I would do whatever I could. And remembering the exercises they gave me, I would try to work those while they were at home, while they were thinking about me. I was in the hospital working on it. And it all worked together. They are God's angels.
And when you were back on stage within about a year. At what point did you reach a level that, if not as good as you were before, but where you felt like you were as good as you were going to get? How long did that take?
Well, Chino Rivera called me.
Mm.
I was working so hard to get back to the show, and it didn't seem like I could make it. I wanted to be in the show so bad, and I was pushing myself. The therapist, Bonnie Evans made it possible for them to have a little dance studio for me and Ed Kessler in those days. And the therapist would come up and they'd work with me. And I met a wonderful lady named Mary Jean Liederbach, who became my dad's therapist.
Oh.
And I met a doctor by the name of Dr. Bill Riley, my vocal coach, who brought my voice back. So there's a whole team of people who were working on this thing.
That's
lost the point, but the point is we all work together to make something happen. They say 3 years, they had me on that stage in 10 months.
The other thing is, I don't know when this was part of the equation too, but you are a diabetic.
Yes, that was in 07. I was diagnosed with diabetes.
Oh, so it was after all of that, but yeah.
It's a shock. Because my God, after all I've gone through, it could be diabetes too. Don't you like musical comedy? The thing is that it came into my life in order for me to overcome, to show that the inner, the will of the spirit, of the inner, the will, the spiritual will. And it was a wake up call to take care of the body and temple, the body temple. And the thing that I learned that it was about exercise. I said, I thought I was exercising, but actually there's a lot of components to diabetes. It's heredity, it's a genetic, it's in your DNA, it's something, but it doesn't have to show up if we do the proper things, which is exercise and eat the proper foods, better food choices. And if you have diabetes, do your medication. When I found this out, I called a company called Sanofi US, and they were gracious enough, and thank you guys for allowing me a platform. We started a platform called Take the Stage for Diabetes, and then we called it STAND, Start Taking Action Now for Diabetes. And there was another group that we hooked up with. We went around the country educating people and making an announcement about the fact that you can live with diabetes, and diabetes is not the horror that we've made it to be.
So it doesn't hold you back at all.
I mean, on it. No, it did not hold me back at all. Matter of fact, once I realized what it was and what I did, I spoke to my doctor about how to live with it. It gave me more energy.
Oh.
More determination. So I didn't miss a step. And I'm going to thank my doctors, you know, who helped me, Dr. Bush, Michael Bush, who helped me along with this thing. It's been amazing. And it's been amazing. It's a great journey.
All the things that you have overcome, and we should talk.
Yeah, but you got to understand, so I don't mean to cut you off.
No.
Do you understand that there are over 27 million people in America alone who are living with diabetes?
Hmm.
At least 5, 6 million who do not even know they have it. So we got an epidemic on our hands. Because nobody wants to talk about this. The more you talk about it, the more we can heal the necessary condition.
You went through drugs and alcohol as well. I'm not sure during what period. How did you kick? I mean, I figure it was the 60s, it was the 70s. That's how you got onto it. How'd you kick it?
Enough is enough. The body says enough is enough. When you're sick and tired of being sick and tired, you seek help. And there are people out there. There are programs out there to help you. There's AA, there's NA. There are people out there who are in the program who could help you through this. Reach out. The thing about the addict feels that he's in it by himself or she's in it by herself, and they can handle it. You cannot handle this disease. It is a disease, and you need help. And then you can reach out, or my want is that you do what you want to do. My want is that you reach out and know that there are people out there who have walked the same path and are on a higher ground and are reaching out for you.
So, do this.
You know, we don't know, as I wrote on my tweet, I said, we do not know the demons inside the human body. Let us pray and be watchful. Because we all have them. All of us have these demons inside of us. It's how we've got to be watchful.
I have hundreds in me, that's for sure. But
yeah, to keep them at bay. Because their job is to bring you down. That's what they're there for. But we got to understand something. That we are... See, we think we're human beings seeking a spiritual existence. No, we're spiritual beings having a human existence. So therefore, we can always turn back to the spirit or higher power or God or Elohim or Yahweh, Jesus, whomever you choose to be your greater, higher power than yourself, and go there.
And is that what you turn to day to day?
It is you. It is in you. It's not outside of you. It's in you. You know, a guy came along 2,000 years ago. He said, the kingdom of heaven is within you.
Hmm.
It's true. And we are ordained to have dominion over this thing called the human body and the mental frailties that jump up in our mind.
But speaking of frailties, you sound great. And I'm sure everybody's going to be wanting to see you at the Tiller Center and eventually on Broadway. But, you know, with all the stuff that you've gone through in your past, and now you're also getting older, how do you compensate for the real, just basic, normal slowing down of aging? I mean, do you practice every day? Do you do yoga? What do you do?
Yeah, you practice every day. You do what you do as much as you can do. And I try to do a lot, probably more than I should do.
Mm-hmm.
And there are moments when you sit back and go, I wish I could. But then you have to turn around and say, but I'm thankful I can do what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it is good. It is, I'm good with it. And it is wonderful. I don't do the cartwheels and splits anymore. I had that. And now I've found another way to move. Less is more, as Bob Fosse would say.
But you still maintain an extremely active schedule. In fact, with all the other things, you also teach a lot, apparently. You go to schools. It's an obvious question, but what do you get out of that?
I get more out of it, I think, than the young people I teach. Because I teach a lot. I teach in universities. And, matter of fact, I've been offered a residency at Tucson, University of Tucson. But I teach around the country. I teach at various schools and centers and wherever people want to get together, because I want to pass it on. I want to pass it on. And what I teach is sort of a different technique. I teach from the inside out. I believe it's all an inside job. And in my class, it's almost therapeutical, because we've got to get to the inside source of where this is coming from in order to free yourself to do the work.
What actually do you teleclass, or how do you physically work with them to get inside their own heads?
It's very simple.
Okay.
How do you feel? Very simple question. How do you feel? And then we go from there. It's a process of how honest are you willing to be? How naked are you willing to be on that stage? Because we all bear our souls on that stage. We're all vulnerable. And we're saying, here I am. Here I am. And how much of here I am are you willing to be?
Well, then that leads to the question, what would you say is the toughest role or the most difficult, challenging role that you've ever had? It could be theater, it could be film, TV, whatever.
You know, the role I did with Judd Hirsch. I'm not Rappaport. And playing the 88-year-old man, which was, I found, a very interesting character, and who had palsy, and getting into that head, and getting into understanding that paralysis of our lives. And I don't have paralysis. I don't have those. I'm not 88 years old, but I had to place myself in that situation and ask permission of that character to enter and become that. He was very difficult.
Wow.
He was a difficult character. Although he didn't have that many lines, it was a whole idea of sitting in that and being that.
Well, I don't know if you're a method actor, but do you have to go, well, you are a very internal actor, that's for sure, but you wouldn't necessarily call it, like, the method. You just have your own way of getting into a character?
I've gathered from my years of my career, I've listened and I've watched, and I've sort of formulated my own method of acting.
Do you call it the Vereen method, or do you don't put a label on it?
I don't put a label on it. But we're starting a school out here in Los Angeles eventually, and I'll let you know about that.
Well, yeah, no, that would be great. And let me ask the converse question of what role, aside from the one that you're playing autobiographically sort of now, dovetails most with who you are, is sort of like the easiest, a role that you just slipped into like nothing.
Oh, what role? Slip into easily.
Sorry.
I don't know. That's a difficult question. I guess a role where I don't have to take on any other aspect and just be myself.
Right. So, I know it's a weird question. So let's move that
question
back to a sort of a more difficult one, perhaps. Is, do you have any memories or thoughts of when you were working on the TV series Roots? And did you realize did you all feel like a heavy responsibility while you were performing and creating that? Or was it just a role?
No, it wasn't more than a role. It was an important document. And all praise to Alex Haley for writing Roots, for going back and researching it, and giving us this wonderful legacy to hold on to. I had no idea, and I didn't do it for the fact of, and one day, you know, we'll be 35 years later, we'll still be talking about Bruce. No, I did it because when I was growing up, there wasn't much to talk about on the American, African-American history in the books. In the history books in school, it was, you know, slave and Lincoln freed you was sort of like the topic. If you went to elementary school and through high school, unless you went to college and started studying black history and studying that sort of thing in those days. But when he came along, he opened up a whole viscera of information to delve into and swim around in and gather knowledge. And I want to be a part of that. And when we were shooting it, it was reverency. Everyone was very respectful, was a better word, respectful of the material that we were dealing with. Mm-hmm. It was very quiet on the set because everybody knew we were dealing in an open wound that had not healed and still is not healed in this country.
Have you seen 12 Years a Slave?
Yes, I have, and I'm bravo, Steve McQueen. Thank you for continuing the conversation.
Right. And also,
conversation we must continue to have, because there's a certain, not value, there's a certain shoe there's a certain respect that you will gather by honoring your ancestry, because you know who you are. And maybe we will not repeat the same mistakes as society and as a people, but the injustice between people will diminish. And we'll begin to go to the place we all talk about on Sundays and write songs about and write books about, a place called love. And love one another and respect one another, but first respect yourself and your and where you've come from. And maybe, just maybe, we'll have a utopian society.
That's a pretty optimistic thought. I mean, it's great if it happens.
It's very optimistic, but we've got to hold on to that thought and maybe move towards that direction. Yeah, not maybe, move towards that direction. We keep talking about it. We have churches that preach about it. We have synagogues that preach about it. We have mosques that pray about it. And everyone's praying about a world of peace, a world of love. This is the start of it. Have a conversation.
And do you think the arts can help?
It's a real conversation. The arts is the only way to help. It's all about the arts. It's all about, you understand something? The Bible itself says, in the beginning, God created. He did not say, in the beginning, God manufactured. In the beginning, God created. We are all creative expressions of that which created us. We are all walking and talking art forms.
Oh, I love that. That's what, and it's a, who else but Ben Vereen to think of that and to tell us that? That's really, that's wonderful. Thank you, man. Thank you. Do you have about time for a couple more quick questions, or do you have to run?
No, go ahead.
Oh, great, okay. Just curious about another couple of career things. For example, were there any roles that you tried out for that you really wanted that you didn't get, either in theater or in film and TV?
Everyone I try out for. Everyone I try out for. I really want this role. I really want this role. I'm glad I didn't get that role. But no, there's everyone, you try out for something, you want to get it. That's the actor's thing. That's the, you know, yes, let me do this role.
Well, was there a particular one or two where you saw the final result and you said to yourself, oh, I would have been so much better? Or vice versa, you said, oh, you know what, I would have done okay, but they were right for that.
Made a better choice? I don't know. I can't think of one right now right off the top of my head. But there have been. There have been some. I see the choice they made to go, no, I wish I would have done it this way. But that's the ego talking. It's blessed. It's all blessed. It's all good.
Now, what something people... But, might...
And obviously, that didn't come down for me because it wasn't right for me.
Right, in the grand scheme of things, you know, you take your career as a longevity thing along the way, it just wasn't meant to be. You know, you have to take that sort of...
Exactly, and keep on stepping. You don't sit there and dwell in it. You don't make that the career move. You get up and keep on stepping. You say, thank you for the experience. Now I'll be better for my next experience. And you open yourself up for the universe to give you whatever the blessing you would have.
Now, one of the blessings that you did have, although it was fairly short-lived, and I don't know if people remember, but you had your own TV variety show. What was that like? Yeah,
was wonderful. It was actually a summer replacement show.
Okay.
And the variety shows. And I hope my daughter and I talk about bringing that back, the variety show. And it was wonderful. Look at Carol Burnett and all those wonderful people that I had a chance to work with on their shows. And then the various award shows, the variety shows. And it was great. It was great.
Oh, cool. Do you have any specific memories of doing it or any particular guest stars that you had fun with or an anecdote? What?
I remember doing it. I came out, I'd seen Wayne Newton on television. And I'd seen him, you know, but I didn't really know Wayne Newton. And he came on my show, and the man was so tall. It was in his belt buckle. I said, my God.
I didn't realize Wayne Newton was that tall. He doesn't appear to be.
He was tall. He was huge. And he was on the show. And Lola Falana and Adrian. And, some wonderful people. It was a great show. Jaime Rogers, choreographer.
And Avery Schreiber was on there.
Who suggested I do the show and stood beside me. You know? Liz Torres. Avery Shriver,
right.
All those great people I had the chance to work with.
Now, rolling all the way back, do you remember the first moments when you were a kid when you realized that, like, all kids sing and jump around and dance, but when you realized, oh, I might be a little bit special?
I'm still really feeling that.
Yeah.
I'm still that little kid. That little kid's still the one I want to play. Just wants to play out here doing this and give to his audience, give to the world. I never really had that thought. It's sort of like, as I tell people, I think that this career chose me. I didn't really choose it. I just was open. And one day, this in my neighborhood, in the during that time, the 50s, it was a thing called tokenism. I don't know if you remember that.
Mm.
Where, you know, they said, well, we got to have some, you know, some black people in our organization, you know, because things are changing. And about that time, this white gentleman came into my neighborhood and was looking for kids to go to a dance school. And he chose me. And he said, we're going to take this, you know, send your kid to our school. And little did he know that he was the one that said, the arts come this way.
Wow.
I don't even know the man's name. But he pointed to me and said, this kid, out of all the kids on the block. And I'll just sit back to him and I say to myself, why did that happen? It was already divinely ordered. For all of us in our lives, we wonder why, I think. I can only speak for myself.
Sure.
Why certain things happen. It's divine. It's just the divine order of things.
Oh.
That doesn't mean you don't do the work. You gotta do the work.
But I've got to ask, I've forgotten to ask beforehand about your knowing Sammy Davis Jr.
Yes.
Memories of him? Any anecdotes about him?
Sammy and I often, so I do, as a matter of fact, I do some of Sammy's songs. Why? Because we need to keep alive the memory of those who paved the way for us to be on the stage today. And I tell young people that till this day. You know, Usher is my godson. And I say to Usher, I say, you know, look, you know, you got to remember on whose backs you're standing. And, you know, and I tell all these Big Boy and Terrence Howard, all these people, remember on whose backs you're standing. So I do a tribute to Sammy. I do a tribute to Frank. I sing about them and do their songs. But Frank, Sammy, we met in Sweet Charity, the movie with Shirley MacLaine.
Right.
And he pointed me, he said, you're coming with me. And he took me to London, my first time in Europe. And not only that, Sammy, when I was out of work, some people don't know about this sweet man. I was walking, I was broke in L.A., and I heard that he was shooting at the Paramount Studios. So I snuck onto the lot, and I was standing among the crowd there. And he looked out in the car, and he saw me. He came over, he said, Ben, he said, what are you doing? And of course, those actors, we lie. Well, you know, they got some things working for me. I'm working on this.
Uh-huh.
That. He said, you're unemployed. I said, yeah. He said, look, I'm going to film down in Las Vegas called The Rise and Fall of Billy Baker. Come down to Vegas. The producers did not want me on the set. Sammy paid me out of his own pocket.
Whoa.
That was on that, in that movie.
Why did the producers, what did they have against you?
I have no idea. I have no idea. But they didn't want me on the set.
But
maybe it's because Sammy said he wanted me on the movie. I have no idea. But this was Sammy. When Sammy died, he had not died. Alter Beach went through. She had to hide money from the government because he gave everything away.
Hmm.
He would give you the shirt off his back. He was a lover of life and a lover of this career. He was an amazing man. And he should well be remembered. As much as we remember Frank, we should be holding up Sammy Davis Jr.
The way you describe him is the way a lot of people are going to describe you, Ben Vereen. An amazing man, a lover of life, and an incredible talent and vitality.
Thank you.
And it's just been really a delight and an honor to bring you into the neighborhood. And folks, if you want to get a look at Steppin' Out with Ben Vereen before it reaches Broadway and the rest of the world, come to the Tillis Center on April 4th and see the one, the only, the legendary Ben Vereen. Ben, all I can do is thank you so much for taking the time and spending it with us in the neighborhood.
Thank you.